Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
I'm an Englishman. I'm from Bermondsey, southeast London. My father was called George. He was also from Bermondsey. His father, another Bermondsey man, was called George too. And his father, my great-grandfather, just from the same place. He was called Edward. These three generations of my family were in the fish trade. I'm the first member of my family not to work at the market in Billingsgate. My great-grandfather had 11 brothers and sisters. They all married, except one. They had 43 children. Of these, 37 married. And between them, they had a further 159 children. One of those was my father. I don't know exactly how many of his generation married or exactly how many children they produced. I've so far tracked over 200 of them. Many still live in Bermondsey. Some are still in the fish trade. There are 7 called George and 5 called Victoria. I stand here in front of you as a representative of all of them. And I ask in their name the great question put by our patron, Mr. Powell. What do they know of England, who only England know? Or, what can my family, who come from England, who lived in England, who know only England, say of this, our country? Mr. Powell once spoke of the destruction of ancient Athens and the miraculous survival in the blackened ruins of that city of the sacred olive tree, the symbol of Greece, their country. And he also spoke of us, the English, at the heart of a vanished empire, seeming to find within ourselves, like one of our own oak trees, the sap rising from our ancient roots. And he said, perhaps after all, we, who have inhabited this island fortress for an unbroken 1,000 years, brought up, as he said, within the sound of English birdsong, under the English oak, in the English meadow, beneath the red cross of St. George, it is us who know most of England. And I appreciated him for saying that, because it was as if he spoke for my family, who understand well their own country. who understand even better their own capital, London Town, as we used to call her. As we strolled in her parks, as we marveled at her palaces, as we did business in the city, went west for a dance, took a boat on the river. The pale ale and eel pie of old London. The London of my family for as many generations as I know. The London that within 15 years would be less than 50% white. London where in 15 years a white person will be in the minority. Am I racist? No. Do I have anything against people of other races? No. Would I prevent them from coming into my home? No. So what then is my gripe? My gripe. And I speak on behalf of 7 men called George and 5 women called Victoria. My gripe is quite simple. My gripe is that we were never asked. My gripe is that we were told, not asked. And every day we are told again and again how we are to be and how our country is to be. We're told by them, and we know who they are. They're English too. They're the class that has always set themselves apart. They're the class that has always taken whatever they wanted for themselves. And now they are the class that is giving England away. They have never asked us. And they never will. Do we allow them to sell our heritage? Or is it time for us to speak? To speak. To refuse them the right. To give away our holy, our bountiful, our only England that has nurtured us naked, grown us as the oak. Is it time for us that England know to come yet again and defend our country? With our fire, our fists! Is it time for our sons to rise again? I say yes. I say yes. I say yes!
Yes. Exactly. Well said, young man. Good evening and good afternoon and welcome to the English Defence League radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a show called the English Defence League, a radio show, Terror Attack on London Bridge. Two dead. So welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell, and my wingman for this evening is Dave Agador Milner. Sadly, we are reporting tonight of another Islamic terrorist-related incident on London Bridge, which saw a number of people being stabbed and the alleged jihad dispatched by 2 armed response officers. We have all said on this program for all the public to stay vigilant, for these sort of incidents will become more predominant with the amount of death cultists who live in our country. What the police officers did was commendable, and members of the public, the heroes, who restrained this person was also honourably done. Thank you all for your bravery. God bless you all. no surrender, no to terrorists ever. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. Of course, that was by the late, great Edmund Burke. Those who make peaceful a revolution impossible will make violent a revolution inevitable. And that was, of course, by the late, great President John F. Kennedy. Without further ado, let me bring on my wingman, a great colleague of mine, Mr. Dave Agador Milner. Good evening and good afternoon, Dave, and welcome.
Good evening, Jeff. Good evening to everybody in the UK, and a good afternoon to everybody in the United States. Hello to everybody around the world, and of course, off Earth, yes, we've got a show with a somber mood to start off with. Of course, yet another terrorist attack, and this one has a twist. I mean, we see a lot of these that go on during the year. Now, of course, with the Christmas season upon us, it's been accelerated, as Jeff will point out later. The attack that we're going to begin with happened on a Friday. That's, of course, after these people have been ginned up by their imams to commit these acts and things of that nature. These things have to be recorded, and they have to be covered by us, and they will be. And what we'll do is we'll start out first with a short article from Breitbart. This will be about 2 minutes and 50 seconds. This will set things up for those of you in the States and in other countries that didn't get a complete picture of this. Certainly if you listen to the fake stream media, because they're all full of this impeachment garbage. So, Jeff, if you're prepared, we'll start out with this Breitbart article. It's going to be 2 minutes and 50 seconds long. You ready, brother?
Yeah, go for it, Doug.
All right, here we go, guys. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show. This is from Breitbart.
Report: London attacker was convicted terrorist with jihadist ties. By Joshua Kaplan on November 29, 2019. Update: 7:46 p.m. EST /00:46 GMT. The man who carried out the London Bridge terror attack has been identified as 28-year-old Usman Khan, Metropolitan Police confirm. He was jailed in 2012 as part of a plot to bomb the London Stock Exchange and build a terrorist training camp. He was also believed to have supported Al-Muhajirun, a militant jihadist network in the United Kingdom, reports The Guardian. Read the original article below. The suspected attacker responsible for Friday's deadly stabbing in central London was a convicted terrorist who was recently released from prison and believed to possess ties to Islamic extremist groups, according to The Times. Earlier, a knife-wielding man stabbed several people at London Bridge, killing two and wounding three others. Police shot the suspect dead at the scene. He is said to have worn a fake explosive vest and an electronic prison tag. Prior to the attack, the knifeman threatened to blow up Fishmongers Hall, where he was reportedly planning to attend a conference on prisoner rehabilitation organized by the University of Cambridge, reports The Times. Authorities are treating the deadly incident as a terror attack. Pedestrians and vehicular commuters described the fear they felt in the chaos at the scene. Yulugbek of Uzbekistan told The Times, "I saw the guy lying on the ground and didn't know what was going on." Beck, who video recorded shots being fired, added, "The police were shouting at him and he was shouting, 'Help, help, help.' Everyone was so shook up. Police were screaming, 'Put it down.'" Authorities shut off traffic to London Bridge and closed a nearby train station during the incident. They later said that enhanced patrols would be implemented throughout the city during this busy shopping period. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said it is a mistake to allow criminals to leave prison early and vowed to increase police presence following the heartbreaking attack. "Obviously, our thoughts are very much them and their families, their loved ones, everybody affected by the attack," Johnson told reporters. "My thanks go first of all to the emergency services, the police, for their bravery and their professionalism, and to repeat again and give thanks again to members of the public who put themselves in harm's way to protect others. I think they represent the best of our country. I thank them on behalf of the rest of our country," he added. A NATO official said the alliance is not making any change in plans for next week's summit in London. President Donald Trump is among those scheduled to attend. The UPI contributed to this report.
Well, there you go, and I think that sums it up. But I want to underline the heroism of the Londoners that took after this this barbarian who was he was hell-bent on killing as many people as he possibly could, or maiming people. And if it wasn't for the bravery of the general public, which you see, just ordinary people gathered, jumped on this guy, dragged him down on the floor, wrestled with him, and then the police arrived, and then the police ushered them away, and then they just dispatched him. That's it. That is the way it should be done, with feral people like that who wants to cause death and destruction on the streets of London or anywhere else in the world. This is how they should be treated, with no respect, no dignity. You will be dispatched. How dare you attempt to attack innocent people going about their business, doing their things. This, I just hope this is an opening eye for a lot of the maybe the future jihadists. This is what's going to happen to you. If you think you're not, it's not, it will. You will be dispatched. People have had enough of it. And the general public, what can I say? Pure heroism. And they knew. The thing about it is, they knew when they were wrestling Scout to this guy to the ground, that he had, we didn't know what it was, but they knew it was an improvised explosive device that they could be caught up in a blast at any time. Just think about what heroism it takes to do that, to stop anybody else being armed. And once again, for anybody who's listening to this that might have been involved, you've got my highest respect. You are what I look to, heroes. And that is what this great, was what London's built on, great heroes like you. And it's what this country's built on. So God bless you and thank you for what you did. And to the police who dispatched that scumbag, well done. That's the first time I can really say, quite honestly, that you done a wicked job. Brilliant. Well done. There you go, Dave. That's what I want to say about that. And it has to be spoke for the heroes out there. Yeah, go.
All right, Jeff. Well, obviously, I mirror your sentiments. You know, the thing that I know bothers you the most about some of the responses to some of these issues over the years, some of these attacks, not issues, attacks, has been the general police coming out and saying, run, hide, and tell. Well, these people in London that day did not run, hide, and tell. You know, they did what I always say that people should try to do, and that is stand, fight, and win. And that's what happened with this.
There you
man.
Go.
That's it. Stand, fight, and win. Because that's what you have to do. If you don't, then these Islamic terrorists, and let's just be real about who they are, own your soul, and they can't have it. That's what those people in London did. They told them, no, you can't have our souls. And I commend them a very, very great deal. And Jeff,
I hope they get the highest award awarded for them, because they could have all been blown up trying to take this guy down. They didn't know. So what can you say? You never know the circumstances, but they was just there to stop this person carrying on, rampaging and hurting innocent people. It could be children, could be anything. This person didn't care. He just wanted them dead. That's it. As I say, big respect for everybody that was involved. The weather police was there, so quick, and the armed response was, well, it's what you expect. You know, you want to get rid of this person. This person does not need to live and breathe the same air as the citizens of their country do. So that's it. That's a big warning to you, the huge jihadists out there. Take this way. You will be hunted down and you will be taken down. That's it. We've all had enough of your behaviour. This time when you, time of year when you think, we're just thinking of Christmas, this, that and the other. Of course, a lot of people are. And that's why myself and Dave say every time when we do a show, please, please be vigilant out there. There are people out there who are going to cause you harm, death and harm. So we say this, I'll say this week in, week out, and now you know why that myself and Dave says this every show, because it's so important that you do not get complacent. It's easy to this time of year, holiday time, it's easy to just forget the umdrama things, and before you know it, you've got some guy running to you with a big, dirty, great big carving knife. You see it? It was about a 9-inch, 10-inch long. You know, before you know it, you're trying to get your wits about you exactly what's going on, because it's confusion, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when things like that happen, you're confused. Once you focus on exactly what's going on and you've got your head about it, then you can respond. And that's exactly what the general public did. What can I say? I'm overwhelmed with the response of the people. The ordinary Londoners doing their thing. That was brilliant, though. Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially since they didn't know whether the explosive vest this guy was wearing was real or not. Now, the Breitbart story, we have to reemphasize, said that it was a fake one. But they didn't know that when they tackled him. You know, they didn't have any idea about that. And you know, again, that just shows the people running to danger. I mean, if our governments won't do anything to help us in those circumstances, then we have to do it for ourselves. And fortunately, this time, the public and the police acted in concert to nail this bugger. Now, Jeff, I gave you a story in your Skype there from TR.News.
Can I just say, just before, because I see the story, I've got it up in front of me, I'm ready to roll it. Something I just want to say, the reason why, and most of you have seen, the last part of the incident before that person was dispatched by the police, is a young man who was fighting and struggling. And you know why he's holding on like he was? Because he knew what the guy had, and he wanted to keep his hands away from any detonating device. That was what he was thinking. That is why he clung on. That's why he had to be dragged off. That was the bride. I hope that he's awarded the Victoria Cross, because this was fantastic. The most heroic thing I've seen for a long time. But, you know, apart from Roy Lara on London Bridge. London Bridge again, Dave. Roy Lara.
That's right, Jeff.
Put his life there. And he was cut to ribbons. And look at the crap he took over it by the left wing. And that, you know. But, Dave, go on, Dave. Sorry. Back to you, pal.
Well, no, I'm just setting up the story here for everybody. The one Jeff's going to read, it comes from TR.News. All right, and let's get a date and everything here. This was put out on the 30th of November yesterday. Okay, and this one's really good. It's it comes from the TR.News staff, and TR.News, by the way, guys,
it's always good.
Yeah, it's always good. It's a good place to go to. To find some news, to find some news about the things that we talk about. And, you know, you want to go to that, it's https://www.tr.news, and you'll find some good stuff there. But just, if you're ready, you know, go ahead and start that article, and, we'll get a little bit more insight into this, because this wasn't just your typical attack by your typical terrorist. Go ahead, brother. Please.
Thank you very much, Dave. Yeah, Usman Khan, a known extremist, only recently released from prison. is responsible for the Black Friday Islamic terror attack in London, killing two people. Terrorist walking free amongst us. Usman Khan, a Kashmiri Muslim, was jailed for terrorism offences in 2012 because he was part of a terror cell that planned to bomb the London Stock Exchange. The cell also planned to plant bombs in pub toilets in Stoke-on-Trent in the hope of targeting the members of the English, listen to this, the English Defence League. Usman, English Defence League, don't know about that. Usman also planned to open a training facility in Kashmir, masquerading as a madrasa, which would have prevented a long-term terrorist threat to the region, as well as the UK. Mr. Justin Wilkie, who presided over the case at the time, said, "It is clear that this was a serious long-term venture in terrorism, the purpose of which was to establish and manage a terrorist training facility at the madrasa to fund, raise for its construction and operation by use of various means, including fraud, and to recruit young British Muslims to go and train, thereafter being available to commit terrorism abroad and at home." Mr. Justin Wilkie was right about Usman. The decision he made at the time completely vindicated him and justifies the sentence passed down to him. In my judgment, these offenders would remain even after a lengthy term of imprisonment of such a significant risk that the public could not be adequately protected by their being managed on license in the community. How true his words rang out there. Despite Mr. Justice Wilkes' warning about the significant Usman posed to the general public, Usman's sentence was shortened after he successfully appealed, claiming that his original sentence was too long. Usman and his co-defendants had their sentences reduced to 16 years on appeal, which meant that after serving 7 years, Usman was released on license and made to wear a tag. What did that do? How did monitoring work for the two innocent people Khan murdered in cold blood on London Bridge yesterday? If it wasn't for some brave Brits in the area, Usman may have killed more people. Our thoughts and prayers with the families of the victims. I think that could be it. There is something there. There's more of an after thing there. Hang on. Let me go on to say, I'm going to miss this a little bit because it's just my eyes, it's been blanked out and my eyes are not that brilliant. But anyway, there is a story continues there. Al-Qaeda inspired. Usman and the terror cell he was part of was inspired by the ideology of Anwar al-Awlaki and the Al-Qaeda. The cell also had plans to send letter bombs and conduct a Mumbai-style armed assault. How could an appeal court judge think that the original sentence handed down to Usman was too tough? Yeah, it's got a lot of questions got to be answered, ladies and gentlemen. In April this year, strict new laws were introduced to tackle terrorism. The Counter-Terrorism and Border Security Act 2019. It does not seem on strict or tough when the likes of Usman are allowed out of prison early only to commit a despicable murderous Islamic terror attack. While free, perhaps the act needs to be to review its sentences, guidelines, given the fact that it's supposed to make extended sentences available for terrorism offences. Yeah, for terrorism offences. Ending automatically early release and allowing a longer period on licence. Maybe it should recall any terrorists who have been released early prior to the act coming into force and get them off our streets. Due to public outrage, the parole board made a statement. Let me go on just for 1 second, ladies and gentlemen. It goes on to say, we have every sympathy with those affected by the dreadful events that happened in London Bridge yesterday. Given the seriousness of this attack, it is understandable that there is a speculation about the attacker's release from prison. The parole board can confirm it had no involvement with the release of the individual identified as the attacker, who appears to have been released automatically on licence as required by the law, without even being referred to the board. Let me see. I think that's the story, Dave. That is it. There's a lot to digest there about the reason he was let out. I mean, they did bring into the new law into being to stop these type of people being released. It's just sad that he got through the loop and he went about doing what he planned to do. All the years he was banged up, he knew that he would get out one day and he would do exactly what he'd done Friday afternoon at 2:02 in the afternoon. He planned it and he didn't know exactly how the outcome was going to be. Well, he might get away with it. He might scream for mercy. Unfortunately for him, he's been buried by now and he's a Muslim, isn't he? They bury him soon after, unless he's put on ice and there has to be post-mortem, etc., etc. And then there's that thing. So it doesn't matter if he's a Muslim or not, does it? I don't know, mate. I don't know. Back to you, Mr. Dave.
Well, yeah, Jeff. I mean, just so much to unpack with this one, as opposed to so many others that have happened. But what it glaringly shows to me is the very thing that the English Defense League has been talking about through the entire 10 years of its existence. There appears, and this just gives proof to it, to be a double standard. We've said this before, and we're saying it again because now it's proven, when it comes to Muslims and non-Muslims in the law in the United Kingdom. The Mohammedans are given special treatment as if the fact that they are Mohammedans is a mitigating circumstance in whatever they do. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be their rape jihad that they have going on. It can be wife beating. It can be murder. It can be anything. Even now we see planning terrorist attacks and things of that nature. They get a break because they're Mohammedans. It's the kind of break that they wouldn't have gotten. This guy, if he had been a member of the EDL, he wouldn't have gotten this break. And you read it yourself, Jeff, right there. He and this group of his were planning, among other things, to try and blow up members of the EDL. All right. Again,
that's pretty sick, didn't it,
Ty? Yeah. If he had been a member of the EDL, he'd still be in jail. Okay, let's just say that right there. He would still be in prison, probably in a Muslim-controlled prison, and going through hell, and that would be going on for a long time. He would have been old and gray by the time he got out, if he managed to live.
Yeah, right? I mean, our organization's never been attacked anybody, but they want to try to kill us, and And it's quite obvious what it said there, Dave, we take the stick from the law. It's us who takes the flak, and it's the poor innocent public out there who feels the brunt of them underestimating exactly the threat that we've been talking about for, Dave, how many years? How many
years
have we gone on about this?
A decade, yeah, Jeff. You know, it's been going on. You guys have, the EDL has been in existence for 10 years and talking about this, and the only thanks that they've gotten is being called racist, even though Islam is not a race, and xenophobes and all this other crud that people are called to tell the truth about Islam. But again, guys listening, okay, these stories have just shown you the proof here. The system in the United Kingdom is broken, and the system in the United States, for you Americans, isn't far behind. Any Europeans listening to this, you know your system is just as broken too. All right, it is that needs to be changed. All right, the only thing the EDL has ever asked for, and you can read it in their mission statement. All right, that's in our show page. There's a direct link to it. The only thing the EDL has ever asked for is equal treatment under the law, and they've also asked for Islam. Not Mohammedans themselves, but Islam, the ideology, to be examined as a possible prime mover in these terroristic attacks, examined by the government in open examinations, okay? And I see no problem in that, because I've been saying, and Jeff's been saying, and many of our colleagues have said, that Islam is the prime mover in these attacks. There's nothing wrong with government doing the kind of research that's necessary to find out whether that is, in fact, the case. The reason, Jeff, I think that they don't do it, and you can please throw your two cents in after this, is because I think we know what will come about if an honest study is done on this, and what will come out will be that, yes, Islam is the primary cause for this, and that means that governments will have to do something about Islam. And they don't want to go there. They don't want to do that because too many people are getting bribes and getting to stay in office and things of that nature. So they don't want to rock that boat. What do you think, brother?
Well, yeah, I mean, not only that, it's the petrol dollars, it's the soldiers who rules over the governments. I mean, that's what you got to tell the way it is, and this is what we all know. That is the reason why they're very soft and easygoing on this sort of situation, and attack people like us who speak out, because they don't want us to rock the gravy boat. That's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. It's all about not rocking the boat. That's what it all comes down to. They're gravy boats. So there you go. That's just me. This is just me summing it up the way that I've always seen it as. It's the gravy boat. They don't want to rock it, and they don't want to spill it. There you go, Dave.
I got to tell you, Jeff, being that we celebrated Thanksgiving over here in the United States on Thursday, you know, you're... Your analysis, brother, was very delicious. Not just the regular boat, the gravy boat. And we know where the gravy goes, right into their pockets. And the same thing, by the way, again, is happening right here in the United States. We had, in the last election, Americans, we had over 90 Mohammedans that ran for office. They didn't all win, but they ran for office. Okay, so don't think this is just something that's going on in the UK. That's why I'm here. I'm here, you know, acting as Jeff's wingman to sound the warning to my fellow Americans. Guys, this is in our face now. This is in our face. We have Mohammedans in Congress now, and they're awful. Okay, and it's just going to get worse if we don't do something about Islam. Now, Jeff, I want to do a little something. I want to switch over, if you don't mind, to something a little bit a little bit lighter, because we did have some stories last Sunday that we didn't get to. Last Sunday was a tremendous show. And, you know, the holiday passed and things like that. I mean, you know, it really has been a busy time since then, as you guys have heard. And there were some positive stories out there from our Sunday show that we didn't get to. Just for a moment, Jeff, if you don't mind, I'd like to throw in something a little bit light. This lasts 3 minutes and 18 seconds. I think you know what I'm going to do. If you're ready, I'm going to go ahead and play this. This has to do with the seasonal thing. You ready?
Let's go for it, guys.
All right, guys. Here you go. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
As we gather this week with loved ones across our beautiful land, we give thanks to God for the many gifts that He has bestowed upon us. Today we also come together to honor the beautiful feathered friend, the noble turkey. And that's a beauty. It's said that Abraham Lincoln was the first president to spare a Thanksgiving turkey at the request of his son. In 1947, President Harry Truman accepted the first annual national Thanksgiving turkey. In the decades that followed, presidents from Kennedy to Reagan would show mercy to their birds. But it was George H.W. Bush who first issued an official pardon. In keeping with that tradition, today I will issue a pardon to a pair of very handsome birds, Butter and his alternate Bread. Their names were chosen by the students of Harold's Christian Academy in North Carolina, great state. Bread and Butter were raised in Tar Heel State by farmer Wellie Jackson, who's here with us with his wife, Tara, and their lovely family. And I want to thank you very much. Great job. Great job. Thank you very much. Thankfully, Bread and Butter have been specially raised by the Jacksons to remain calm under any condition, which will be very important because they've already received subpoenas to appear in Adam Schiff's basement on Thursday. True. Hundreds of people have. It seems the Democrats are accusing me of being too soft on turkey. But Bread and Butter, I should note that unlike previous witnesses, you and I have actually met. It's very unusual. In any event, I expect this pardon will be a very popular one with the media. After all, turkeys are closely related to vultures. I don't know if I like that line, but there was a little truth to it. But today, after the birds will retire to Gobbler's Rest at Virginia Tech, great college, where they will be cared for and enjoy a terrific life. So now we reach the moment Bread and Butter have been waiting for so patiently, their presidential pardons. Melania and I wish all Americans a very happy and blessed Thanksgiving. We love you all. Butter, let's talk to you for a second, because I'm going to do something that you're going to be very happy about. Butter, I wish you a lot of luck, but I hereby grant you a full and complete pardon. Full and complete.
What can I say? Your president, are you such a lucky man to have a president with the humour, with all the hanging over him. He's got such a wicked sense of humour. He's going to go down to one of the funniest presidents of all time, isn't he? What humour! Especially calling out Schiffy and the Democrats. Bang on! Oh my goodness me. Dave, brilliant,
yeah,
mate. Brilliant.
It really is funny, Jeff. You know, I mean, I've got to say, You know, it's a great contrast. I love to tell this story just because it really shows the contrast. I mean, you could see in the video President Trump, you know, petting the turkey and everything. And, you know, goes right over to it and pets it. And I can remember back, this might have been the first time, his first year in office, when President Obama was holding court and pardoning the turkeys. And this was when this had to be his first or second year in office, because his girls were really, you know, really young at the time. And the girls went up to the turkey and petted the turkey, and they wanted him to come up to the turkey, but he would not go up and pet the turkey. Like, dude, it's not gonna. Even though I have the guys, you know, I do apologize for saying this. This wasn't very Christian, you know. But when he got close to the turkey, I was telling the turkey, you know, as I was watching, like, bite him, come on, bite him, bite him, bite him. It didn't bite him, but that's the thing. It wasn't going to bite him, and he should have known it wasn't. But he was too cowardly to even pet the. He finally pet the turkey, but that was only because his girls shamed him into petting the turkey. It's just terrible. You contrast that with President Trump taking the occasion and making some jokes and things of that nature. It was a good bit of fun, and we really, really need to have a bit of fun, guys. You know, because right now it is a very hard time that we're experiencing with these attacks and things of that nature. Jeff has put this out again, and it has to be said that you know, the terrorists are out there, and what they want to do is they want to make sure that our Christmas season is spoiled, okay? And it hasn't been just that attack. There was another attack in The Hague, all right? And yep. that one took place yesterday, all right? And you saw this. It was on this street in The Hague, in this shopping district, where all these beautiful Christmas lights and everything were going on and everything. And again, this guy goes up and stabs some people. All right, and it's another Muslim. And I want to say, especially, guys, to my American brothers and sisters, guys, there are many states where you can conceal carry legally, all right? And you can also carry legally openly and things of that nature. Of course, always be safe. Of course, always make sure that you can legally carry where you're carrying. But remember that this is the season where the Mohammedans will target us, because
it's hunting season,
I think,
for them, Dave. It's hunting season for the Muslims. They know that people are going about Christmas, doing their Christmas thing, not even thinking about them evil mm-hmm. people out there. But we say week in, week out, just be aware that people out there want to kill us. Me, you, your family, even blow us up. You know, and that was said when we was reading out that they were intended on blowing up an English Defence League, people. So it goes to show you that we are, the enemy is out there. The enemy is definitely out there, and we must always be alert and aware and vigilant. Always, wherever you are. Okay. Come back to you, Dave. I keep missed your message, mate. What did you say?
Well, I was just saying, Jeff, it's just about time for you to call back in. Yeah, it's just about time for you to call back in if you'd like to do that. I'll continue.
I've got a minute or so. But Dave, thanks for that. I missed it. It came. And because I was just finishing off and I was, you know, miles ahead of myself, I missed it, and it just disappeared before. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to pass it back to you, Dave, but then I'm going to do my thing, mate. I'm going to do my thing and then call back in.
All right. Well, as I said in Men in Black, go put your thing down.
There we go.
All right, guys. Now, as Jeff calls back in, I want to bring in another aspect to this. Why are these attacks going on? Now, obviously, part of it is just the general jihad against, in this case, the Christmas attacks against the Sunday people, against Christians. Of course, there are always attacks against the Saturday people, the Jewish people. Those are the basic reasons. But I think, having seen a few things and thought about this a little bit over the Thanksgiving break that we had, that there's another aspect to this. All right. I think that the Mohammedans are actually jealous of our Christian and Jewish celebrations around this time of year. I think that there is an aspect of jealousy involved in this, because let's take a little contrasting look at what the various religions have. We're going to go with Judeo-Christian religions and with Islam. Now, in Islam, when they have their festivals and celebrations and whatever, okay, what they do is basically they take some animals, slit their throats, let them bleed out alive, and die in terrible pain, and then eat the flesh. And then they go out and kill people or hurt people or something of that. That's what Mohammedans call a celebration. Okay, in the Judeo-Christian traditions, what do? We put up lights. We put out special music. We decorate our streets. We decorate our homes. In the case of Christians, we bring a tree into the house. Wonderful traditions. Just guys, use DuckDuckGo. Yeah. Use DuckDuckGo. Don't use Google. Use DuckDuckGo, and search for these things. Search for Poland Christmas lights, Hungary Christmas lights. All right, and you'll see in those countries, they light the joint up from end to end practically for Christmas. It's beautiful. And then you look at pictures of shopping districts in a lot of countries in the rest of Europe, say Germany, France, and the UK too, even though UK is not part of Europe in my mind. It's its own thing. Okay. And what do you see? You might see a few lights and things like that, but not nearly as many. And Ken McClinton, host of the Exceptional Conservative Show, which you can hear at 9:05 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, and the man who runs the Exceptional Conservative Network, was talking a year or two ago about how Washington, D.C., which used to be lit up to beat the band, okay, used to be lights all over the buildings and everything, now it's just dark because of all the political correctness, okay? You really see the contrast between people who have said, you know what, we're going to celebrate our Judeo-Christian traditions and Christianity, and people who don't, or people who are so mired in political correctness that they don't. And I think, Jeff, I think that there is a certain element of jealousy that these Mohammedans have. I mean, you remember, I think this story came from last year. There was a... this happened in Europe, and I think it happened in the United States too, of Mohammedans going in and attacking the Christmas trees. Okay, now you tell me, brother. Okay, because you've been on the ground.
It's haram, Dave. In their eyes,
there it is.
Class as haram.
Yeah, go ahead.
Christmas is class as haram to them. That's it. That's it. That's the reason why they despise it, because it's haram in Islam. There you go, brother.
Yeah. I mean, I really think, though, that aside from it being haram, I think that, and you please give me your opinion on this, because this is something that I just came up with, really, a day or two ago, actually on Thanksgiving when I was watching this program over here that we had called The Great Christmas Light Fight or something like that, that showed all these homes that were just blazing with Christmas lights. It was awesome. I thought about that, and I thought about the fact that these attacks from these Mohammedans go on at Christmas time, and I thought, you know what? Yeah, their quote-unquote religious reasons aside, I think they're just jealous of somebody else having a good time. Jeff, what's your opinion of that?
Well, yeah, because to be honest with you, they don't know they're having a good time. It's cutting animals' throats, smearing blood from the animals over their children, and smiling at the cameras. Now, that is their fun. Is that natural? Is that normal? Not in my eyes, not as a civilized person. I find it extremely disturbing, like most of us would do. We live in a civilized world. Well, most of us do. But when you see this sort of behavior, you know, killing sheep in their gardens and this, that, and the other, and people, neighbours hearing the animals screaming when they're being murdered, because that's what I call it, being murdered, not just ritually slaughtered, but murdered. You know, it is totally barbaric, it's dark. We had no place for that sort of behaviour in civilisation. I don't care about you Muslims, that is like, well, it's what we do. We'll take it to a dark part of the world where you came from and do it there because we don't need it here. How about that, Dave?
Well, I think that's great, Jeff. And I just want to illustrate something here, which I thought was very cool. During that program showing all those Christmas lights, they had one contest, because it's a contest, basically. It's like they take four houses and they judge between them, and they give the winner, you know, like a cash prize and a trophy, all right? But there was one show that they did that they had entire neighborhoods doing this stuff. And there was one neighborhood in the States, okay? It had about a dozen or so houses, and all of them hooked up with you know, just over-the-top Christmas lights, all right? And one of the houses had a Hindu family in it, and they share all of the, you know, all the power and everything and all that. But what they would do before the Christmas displays and everything, for the Hindu Festival of Lights, yes, the Hindus have a Festival of Lights, is they make sure that the Hindu family was able to have a great Festival of Lights display, all right? And then everybody goes on and does Christmas after that. But that shows the kind of cooperation and love that you have. When you have people like, you know, Christians, they don't like Christians, Jewish people, and Hindu people, who and Sikhs as well, who are willing to live and let live, okay, and leave each other alone and let each other worship the way they want to, right? And that's just, again, complete. That's something that the Mohammedans don't have and something they'll never have. And again, I think it's something that they're jealous about. Internally, they can say what they want about their ideology, but I think it's something that they're jealous of. And I love seeing it, man. I love seeing the Christmas lights. I really do. So, you know.
Well, the thing about it is, Dave, is where we like Christmas lights and we like a lot of light in our lives, that goes to show that the Christian faith, the light of the life, but with them, they live in perpetual darkness. So they don't like, no wonder they're envious, because they only live in the dark. They're like cockroaches in the dark. Ladies and gentlemen, oh dear, oh, just talking rather extreme. Well, it's true. They scuffle about in the dark. They do their horrible deeds in the dark so that no one can see and distinguish them. And the people like ourselves who love the light, were part of the light, we would always worship the light and the Lord of the light of the Lord. You know, they will never understand that because they are evil. Yeah. There you go. That's just Jeff's speak.
There you are, man. There you are, yeah. And that's it. From that star that led the wise men to Bethlehem, that started up. You know, it all began, and you see it also in other Christmas and winter traditions, where people light up the night. And this has happened since ancient times. The Romans did it. The Norse people did it.
It's been going longer than Islam. Longer than any of the cultures of death out there. And it will continue well after they're gone as well, Dave. There you go, mate.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, it will, because the light is always there to fight the dark. Jeff, would you like to read another article? This is one of the ones left over from last Sunday. This one isn't very long, I don't think. Would you like to read this one? I'm gonna throw it over.
I feel pretty good.
All right, man.
Have you got it up there, Dave?
I'm sending it to you right now, my brother. There it is.
Yeah. I thought it was there. Yeah, nice one, Dave. Okay, the page is just opening up now, Dave. Okay. Thank you very much, Dave, for passing it over to me. Okay, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. This comes from, was this Yahoo News, Dave?
Yeah, but I did confirm it. Real news sources. I believe this was from the AP. Go ahead, man. No, from Reuters. Yeah, go ahead, man.
Okay, the headline is Venezuela opposition rallies against Maduro to revive momentum. And the story goes on to say by Byron Ellsworth and Daisy Petrego. Caracas, Reuters, Venezuela's opposition staged nationwide protests against President Nicolas Maduro on Saturday and called for a new wave of demonstrations to revive their stalled efforts to topple the deeply unpopular ruling Socialist Party. Protesters waved Venezuela's red, yellow and blue flag in a show of support for the opposition leader Juan Guaido, who in January galvanized the opposition by assuming an interim presidency after declaring Maduro's 2018 re-election a fraud. But Saturday's rallies were significantly smaller than those earlier in the year, and the participants seemed less optimistic about a change, a sign of frustration that Maduro remains in power despite an economic crisis and an aggressive U.S. sanctions. They thought they was going to put the Venezuelan people to sleep. They thought they had instilled fear into our hearts, Guaido told crowds in eastern Caracas. Today, Venezuela is claiming victory in the streets. The opposition will stage frequent demonstrations in the coming days to boost pressure on Maduro, he said, starting with a broad protest on Monday, followed by sector-based protests by students and nurses later this week. Crowds cheered his speech, but dispersed quickly afterwards. Protesters did not clash with security forces in the wake of the rally, as has been typical in recent years. Just bear with me. I know there's a small chance Guaido will get Maduro out, says Rosemary Grella, 49, a socialist professor. But even if there's just a 1% chance, I'm going to throw 99% of my faith behind it. What other option do we have? The country's hyperinflation, along with the deterioration of electricity, water and transportation services, has left many exhausted from simply getting through their day. And change in Venezuela will hinge on a shift of allegiance of the armed forces which remain loyal to Maduro. That contrasts starkly with the situation in Bolivia. Bolivia, where the military called on President Evo Morales to resign following violent street protests over acquisitions. He rigged his October re-election. So once again, the whirring and the twisting and the spider's webs are weaved as usual, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you, brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, the show that we did last Sunday, guys, and you should really go back and listen to that, was about these freedom movements that are going on all over the planet. And it just so happened, first of all, that we had a fantastic guest with Mr. Carmel Melamed, who helped us talk about the protests in Iran, and shed some light, made sure that people understood that no, it wasn't just about gasoline prices and stuff like that. That it was the same thing that's been going on for a while. That the people of Iran are sick and tired of that regime. All right, and the rest of it was stories about places in other countries. And this is going on, guys. This is the encouraging news, because there's so much bad news. I mean, we started out this show today with some pretty bad news, and we know that there'll be other attacks. By the time you guys get to hear this program, who are listening to it at the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com, all right, it'll be close to the end of the year, okay? And you will have heard by that time of other attacks, okay? But it's not all bad news, and we shouldn't be discouraged. That was really the point of that entire program on Sunday, was so that we could pass on that the news isn't all bad, that there are people out there willing to step up and stand up for freedom all over the world. And that includes every continent on the planet. We also covered the Hong Kong protests. And by the way, the elections ended fairly well, from what I have heard, for the people who are pro-democracy. That was in question last week. But it is no longer in question, and we'll see if that turns out to be well for the people. But we also talked about the Yellow Vesters in France and things of that nature. I mean, Jeff, it has to be encouraging to you, who have been with the English Defense League for as long as you have, out there, feet on the street, seeing the kind of things that you've seen, encountering the kind of resistance that you have, that these freedom movements are going on all over the world now. Is it not?
Well, it is. It is. But we knew. We knew it's just like a little ember, a little light that would light a whole, light the world up. That's what you do. You spark that light, and what you create is... It's fantastic. I'm not on the streets like I used to be. I do miss that time. I'm just not well enough to be able to do that. But I can look back and take pride with what we did, what we've always done with the English Defence League. We was a phenomenal way that we come about. And, we're still doing our thing. We're here, me and Dave's here, the radio show, and other people are out there doing all the great works. And I know people ready to rock and roll as soon as they're given a heads up. That's the way it will always be. The EDL, we will never die or fade away. We're just here preparing and ready for whatever might be called upon. So to all you angels out there, all you foot soldiers, rest well, ladies and gentlemen. You will be called upon. You know when your time will be called, and when that time is right, there will be no surrender ever. Back to you, Dave.
Man, awesome stuff, Jeff. Awesome stuff, man. Got one more to do today, and I think this is another one that's encouraging, because we spoke briefly earlier about India, and this is one that I've been holding back, but one that needs to be talked about here. This was put out, updated on the 9th of November, and it's out of the Daily Mail. And if you guys want to go looking for this one is by William Cole from the Mail Online. All right, And the headline here is India's Supreme Court ruled in favor of Hindu temple at centuries-old disputed religious site, also claimed by Muslims, prompting wild celebrations across the country. And we're going to get up into this right here. Okay. The rest of being amid fears of violent clashes breaking out. Now we're going to go ahead and get into the bullet points, everybody. Okay. India's Supreme Court have today ruled in favor of a Hindu group's claim to disputed religious land. That's the first one. Second bullet point. A government-run trust will be set up to construct a temple on the site in the town of Ayodhya in northern India. And guys, there is a picture of a model of that temple in our show slide, so you can check that out. Muslim group who also made claim on the site will receive a larger 5-acre site nearby. And I'll get into later why that's significant. The next one. The Babri Mosque, built on the site in 1528, was razed by a Hindu mob in 1992 as part of the dispute. In other words, they took it down. The people took that down. And the last bullet point. Verdict is a political victory for Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who won a second term in recent election. All right. And I'm going to get into this just a little bit, guys. But before I do, I'll just say that, yes, they may have given the Mohammedans a larger plot of land to appease them, but it wasn't the land they wanted. And that's very important in this issue, is Jeff, as I'm sure you know, and the listeners, as I'm sure you know. The Mohammedans want what they want, and they want exactly that, but they didn't get it this time. So here we go. India's Supreme Court have today ruled in favor of a Hindu group in the long-running battle over a centuries-old religious site, also claimed by Muslims, in a verdict that could raise tensions between the two communities, as if that those tensions weren't already raised enough as it is. The ruling paves the way for the construction of a Hindu temple on the site in the northern town of Ayodhya, a proposal long supported by Prime Minister Narendra Modi's ruling Hindu Nationalist Party, who described the decision as a milestone. Right. The dispute over land ownership has been one of the country's most contentious issues and was inflamed when the 16th century Babri Madrid Mosque was destroyed by the Hindu hardliners in December of 1992. In their ruling, the 5-judge bench, headed by the Chief Justice Ranjan Gogoi, delivered a unanimous judgment, opting to hand over the plot of just 2.77 acres, or 1.1 hectares, of land about the size of a football field to one of the Hindu groups that had staked claim to it. The judge said a temple for the Hindu god Ram should be built on the disputed plot by forming a trust under the control of the central government. They also ruled that a larger 5-acre, 2.02 hectares plot of land will be allotted to the Muslim community at a nearby site in the town. Right. And I'm going to scroll down just a bit, guys. This article, as many of them do, has some pretty nice pictures in it, so you can check that out, guys, as you read it. Okay, let me start again. Here we go. The verdict will be seen as a political victory for Modi, who won a second term in a landslide general election win this year. This verdict shouldn't be seen as a win or loss for anybody, Prime Minister Narendra Modi said on Twitter, adding, "May peace and harmony prevail." For more than seven decades, right-wing Hindu campaigners have been pushing to build a temple on the site, which they believe was the birthplace of Lord Ram, a physical incarnation of the Hindu god Vishnu. They say the site was holy for Hindus long before the Muslim Mughals, India's most prominent Islamic rulers, built what was known as the Babri Mosque there in 1528. The mosque was raised by a Hindu mob in 1992. The destruction of the mosque triggered religious riots in which about 2,000 people, most of them Muslims, were killed across the country and led to a series of court battles with various groups staking claim to the site. And scroll down just a bit more, guys. There are videos as well on this one, and see pictures of a model of the temple and things of that nature. Okay, just a bit more to go here, and then we'll be done. The Supreme Court directed that an alternate land parcel be provided to a Muslim group that had staked claim to the disputed site. The site has been heavily protected since the 1992 religious clashes. Ahead of the ruling, security was tightened in Ayodhya and across India, especially in cities that have suffered communal violence in the past. In some regions, restrictions were placed on gatherings and police were monitoring social media to curb rumors that could fan tension between the communities. In some towns, internet services were also suspended to stop the spread of rumors. The Rashtriya Swayamrak Sangh, parent organization of Modi's party, has decided against celebratory processions if the verdict goes in favor of the Hindus to avoid provoking sectarian violence. And of course, as we know, the verdict did go in the favor of the Hindus. Muslim organizations have appealed for calm to prevent communal flare-ups. That actually, Jeff, surprises me a great deal. And that is the end of that story. So again, on the religious grounds and things like that, good people are winning, and it's my observation that bad people are losing. Your views, brother.
Well done, Dave, as usual. Brilliant. Thank you very much for that, Dave. That's well read out there, bro. I'm just looking now. We're coming to the last bit of the show before we say our final thoughts for the evening. I'm gonna play something now. Just a pre-warning. This is Christmas coming up now, and I'm talking to people across the world, wherever you might be. Don't think you're safe all the time, because this could happen.
But in 1991, after we bankrupted the Soviet Union and it broke up, basically, we experienced the greatest amount of growth any nation's ever experienced in the history of the world. Why? Because white, black, and brown were finally working together, okay? And all that changed on a Tuesday morning in 2001 when Arabs flew airplanes into buildings, and boom, we had a brand new race war. We had white, black, and brown versus a new kind of brown, okay? And that's where we're at now, okay? The Muslim is gonna get you. The Muslim is gonna get you. The Muslim is gonna get you tonight. Allah, Allah. Allah, Allah. That's the new boogeyman. Whatever you do, don't look in a mirror and say Muslim three times. One of them unibrow sons of bitches will show up right behind you with a big-ass turbine, beard, genie bottle in one hand, magic carpet in the other, dynamite belt. Last thing you'll smell is couscous, camel hump, and diesel fuel. Boom! Then he blows you up. Nuh-uh. Mm-hmm. Because the Muslim is gonna get you. The Muslim is gonna get you. The Muslim is gonna get you tonight. Allah, Allah. Allah.
Oh, well,
nice one, Jeff.
Dave, I think I surprised you there, brother, didn't I? I surprised you there. But it has to be done. Please be aware, alert. That is the truth. We're not just saying that. There's people out there with evil intent. Dave?
Well, I know our executive producer Charlie likes that one, and I did too. But you know, I mean, we're putting a funny spin on it, but it is true, guys. There's no safe place anymore from these Mohammedans, and we have to be vigilant, and we have to be prepared to fight them, because they're prepared to fight us.
That's why we'll defeat them, because of our humor, Dave. Whether they like it or not, they haven't got a humor.
Yep.
We have. And
oh,
we can laugh, even though we're in danger. We can laugh at them, because it's them who's going to cop it in the end. There you go.
There you are.
Back to you, Dave.
There you are, Jeff. Yeah. Well, Jeff, I'll go ahead and share my final thoughts. That last story.
It's been a good show
tonight,
though. Just before you do, it's been awesome tonight. The time has just gone manic, like it normally does, but that's what you expect when we're doing a hard-punching show, because that's what it was tonight, Dave. With that, Dave, over to you for your final thoughts and your views. Go ahead, bruv.
Right. Well, that last story just shows again that sensible people winning out, and sensible people standing up around the planet, even in the face of attacks like this London Bridge attack. And it's going to just continue. Guys, it's easy to get discouraged and everything, but you have to look for hope. And that is, I think, what I hope that we gave to you guys. So a little bit of reality, because we have to do that, because the mainstream media is not going to do that for you, but also a little bit of hope. Okay, and I just want to say to everybody, please check out the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com, and that runs through SHR Media. I can also be heard on the SHR Media YouTube page and the Western Free Radio Network. My show times normally are 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday in the United States, and that is 6 p.m. in the U.K., and on Saturdays at midnight Eastern in the United States, that's 5 a.m. in the U.K., and of course, for you guys who are listening to this program on the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com, remember, we are live at 8:30 p.m. in the U.K. and 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States, Thursdays and Sundays. So just come in and join us live, because we'd love to have you. Jeff, it's been an honor and a privilege to work with you, as always. And just want to say to the Foot Soldiers, Angels, and all of the freedom fighters around the world, the people willing to stand up, be prosperous, all right, and be blessed, and no surrender. Back to you, brother.
No surrender ever, Dave. Yes, sir. Yes, we are the truth. We are the mainstream. We are the truth of what's going to be sold out there. We're not going to be around the bushes. We tell stories, hard-hitting, and that's it. All you get is the truth. The whole truth, Dave, had nothing but the truth. And so help us all. So once again, Dave, thank you so much for your great work. As usual, the great slides, with the scripted, etc. You know, we do this as a team, me and Dave. You know, we check things out. He was thinking about saying, and then he saw, I've got the title up there, and he was, my God, are you my brother? You're my brother, that right, Dave? It's just the way that we do things. We are we're really good together. But anyway, guys, we'll be back again this Thursday. So, yeah, be vigilant out there. Be careful and no surrender ever. And with that, we've got to go underground. Here we go, and we'll see you again Thursday evening. Cheers, everybody. God bless you.
But in 1991,
oh, no,
after we bankrupted...
No, no. Oh, that's the first time I've done that for a while, isn't it? This is what... And now for something completely different. Here we go. Come on, boys.
There you go. Yeah, Jeff.
I'm so happy, I can't see that whole thing happening here today. I'll show up soon with your boys again. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, I don't mind. My nuclear test was for Tommy's wife. And the public gets what the public wants. But I want nothing. Pleasure as a hate me, I've had enough already on my face. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging between the facts. To be here, so what you get? The major bet you better lie in it. You choose your lead and the place you trust. And the lies will shut down to the promises. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up.
Oh, my goodness, man, I've got 25 seconds. Is there a priest out there? I think my parrot is possessed. Dave, she's possessed. The guy, yeah, the guys. Yeah, I know, love. Yeah, we got 10 seconds. Dave, much go, buddy. Cheers for all the great works you do. And guys, we'll see you Thursday. Bye-bye. Yeah, so anyway, this is the English Defence League radio show. Signing off for tonight. But you know what, guys? We'll be back again this Thursday. So, as I've said before, and I've said it a few times, be vigilant, be careful, be safe out there, okay? And with that, yeah, we're signing off now. So, see you Thursday. Cheers, Dave. Cheers, everybody. Take care.